Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 24th, 1999, and in the Creekside room this afternoon, Erica, Jake Jacobs, will do a session on, hey, look, the title of my session has the word lesbian in it. So that sounds quite interesting. Let's go and listen to Erica now. And this is tape number 99-3.
Keith, you can roll the tape. My name is Jake Jacobs, and I am here at Holden Village on long-term staff. I've been here for about 2 years. And I've been doing these sessions these past several summers. It's just a way to get people together who are interested in talking about, from a faith perspective, issues that are facing gays and lesbians, especially in our churches. So I know a lot of people think, well, you know, what can we do to change things? So this is a way of sharing information and asking questions and sharing our stories and hopefully getting a little better insight. And so to start off, I'll introduce myself a little bit, then we can go around and introduce ourselves. You can give your name and what drew you to this session. And then maybe some questions will come out of that, and we can kind of bounce those off and that sort of thing. So,
Jake, I'm gonna quickly close the door.
Sure.
Would you be able to come in and close the door?
Oh.
Okay.
You can come in now if you want. I wonder if people will think it's. Then people will come in.
No, I think that would be alright. Yeah, since Joe's playing next door. I'm 24 years old, and like I said, I've been up here at Holden for 2 years. Before that, I worked for a little while in Phoenix, Arizona, but only for a few months after graduating from college. I went to college at Rice University in Houston, Texas, and that's really the environment in which I came out as a lesbian. I guess you could say I've always known I was different in some way. Definitely, I never thought I was straight, but what I really struggled with was, from a Christian point of view, well, is it okay to be gay? I mean, is that wrong? And throughout junior high, high school, and early in college, that was really the question that was on my mind, was kind of, what do I do? Because everything I hear, it may not be directly negative. I never heard sermons at my church denouncing homosexuality, but the kind of tacit assumption was, it's just something we don't talk about and it's probably wrong. We're maybe not sure, but probably. So don't ask any questions, don't, you know, don't discuss this with your friends or your family, or certainly not your pastor. So it was something that I felt like I had to figure out on my own. And as I got into college, my method of doing this was to read. And I read all sorts of books on gay and lesbian theology and debates on homosexuality, and read all this stuff on biblical interpretation, and kind of compiled all the facts, you know, and sat down and made lists of why it would be okay to be gay, and why it would be okay not to be. I really felt there's this tension between being gay and being Christian, and that everybody was telling me I couldn't be both. But I couldn't think about my sexual orientation except in the context of my faith. Eventually, what happened to me was that all these stacks of data and figures and arguments kind of I just realized that wasn't the way that this was going to be solved. I was never going to tally up a list that was going to make me satisfied. Eventually, I had to come to the conclusion that, you know, God loves me no matter what. And for me, that was an immensely freeing thing to say, my being Christian isn't contingent upon my sexual orientation. And out of that, really, I've learned just to read the Bible in a completely new light, and to find a lot of passages that are very supportive of sexual minorities and the way that we are treated in today's society. So I kind of came to that in college, but I didn't really come out publicly or to all but a few friends and my family until I moved up here to Holden. And this has been a place where I've really been able to be myself and to have people accept me and for me to be open about who I am. And I think it's been an enormous gift for me. I'm going to seminary after I leave here in August at Pacific Lutheran Theological Seminary in Berkeley, California. And it'll be pretty different than Holden Village, but I'm really looking forward to it, and I think I can be authentically who I am in that environment because I've been given the gift of these several years to kind of work up to that. So, that's why I'm here. Does anyone want to start introductions?
I can go. My name is Darlene. I'm a volunteer here at the Village. I am not gay. I kind of come from a place of being a Christian and never knowing your Christian gays. So it was always like, it's not really talked about or anything. So I guess one of the reasons I'm here is just to hear that because I enjoy the environment here in Holden, just seeing like, okay, they're Christian and they're gays, and so, but it's new information for me, so I don't know a lot. So just coming here to learn more, maybe to get out some of the old beliefs or things that I was taught, or never questioned, I should say.
I'm Nina, from Eugene, Oregon. And the topic of sexuality and spirituality is always really interesting to me. And the spiritual path that I'm on, it doesn't really come up as it does in Christianity in the same way. And I'm not a Christian, so I don't have the same teachings that a lot of people here have. But it's just always a good question for me. And I talk about spirituality with a lot of people, and I've had both straight and lesbian relationships. So it's always just, I always like to be in conversation and with people on spiritual paths, and this country is usually Christian. And so I always feel some tension come up around how to be out, like my coworker who's great faith, Christian faith, and we have great conversations, but it's been hard to be out to her, and finally I did come out to her. And but it's just always a question to me how to be in that discussion with Christians around that, and I tend to avoid it, so just trying to learn more about that.
You can go.
We're Carl and Sylvia Dino, both from Osage, Iowa. And our daughter was a lesbian. And we did not, when she finally told us this, we did not share it with anybody for several years. And then we were at Holden in
93.
And a couple from San Francisco, the pastors that were, I never did hear if they were excommunicated or what happened to them, but anyway, they were here, and also David Wee and his wife.
They're also here, you know her.
And we talked to them, and so we went home. And just simply went to all of our family. Some of them, of course, had surmised this because, you know, it was easy to surmise for some of them.
As we went home from here that summer, we stopped at all our relatives on the way and told them about Melanie and went in and talked to our pastor when we got home. And, by the time we got through, everybody knew what was going on. We haven't had any serious circumstances because of it.
Well, Melanie was really concerned that her relatives would disown her or something, but they've accepted her. And so anyway, it was kind of a relief, I would say, to be
able
to share.
There's a book with the name Melanie on it, but it's not Nino.
I'm Eileen Hauser, and I come from a small town outside of Portland, and it's named Boring. And, you know, there's a wonderful spirit of love and community here at Holden, and I think that's exactly what made me come here to learn to this session.
I'm Enid Eckstein, and I'm from Calgary, Alberta, in Canada. And I have to confess that I'm here because of my ignorance. I really don't know a lot of things. I don't know. I know some of it, the struggles that gets in the media and all that kind of stuff. And certainly we've had those kinds of things to deal with where I live too. So I guess I'm just basically here to learn because I haven't had to be directly involved or to face any issues surrounding this, and need to know.
I'm Janet Anderson. I'm from Tempe, Arizona. It's a university town on the border of Phoenix. And I'm a straight person, and I finally have courage enough to be a real advocate for gay and lesbian people. We have a Reconciled in Christ congregation at University Lutheran, and we have a wonderful chapter of Lutherans Concern. And I know people from the Catholic group of gay and lesbian people. Presbyterians have a group, even the Mormons as fundamentalists, as they appear from to an outsider, have a group of gay and lesbian people within their church. And I recently read something interesting. I'm reading the book that's kind of highly publicized right now, Real Boys, by William Pollack. Psychiatrist, and he cited a study by a man whose name begins with K, and that's all I can remember. And he's done a long-term study of identical twins and fraternal twins. The percentage of identical twins who were either homosexual or heterosexual, 100% both. If one twin is straight and the other one will be also. Of fraternal twins who do not come from necessarily the same egg, 13.5%, I believe, was the. So, you know, to people who want to say it's a choice of a lifestyle, which I think all my friends who are gay or lesbian definitely know that they were born the way they are and it's not a choice. That's proof to me. I was concerned several years ago in a discussion here at Holden with a theologian, a teacher from the theological seminary, I won't mention which one, and he was very obviously mixed up between gay and lesbian people and pedophiles. He didn't know the difference. And I don't think he was open to knowing either. And I find that Holden, I had a pastor, and I won't say in what city that was, who, a Lutheran pastor who was gay, had a partner, and he wouldn't even discuss the issue. I'm sure he felt that his job would be threatened. And I felt so badly. He would never allow us to even have discussion about it. After he left, the bishop came in and we had a good open discussion about it and have become a Reconciled in Christ congregation. But the pastors from San Francisco, yes, they were kicked out of the Lutheran church and their congregation stayed with them. Same thing happened to a pastor in Iowa, I believe, if any of you are from Iowa. And we were asked to write in about that. And so hopefully, when the Lutheran church has their national synod meeting, it will be brought up again and they will not be so discriminatory against gay and lesbian pastors.
I'm Sue Rubisa, came from Portland, Oregon, and I really don't know much about the gay and lesbian, so I thought I'd kind of open my mind and see, I see the whole side. Really, truly, I kind of both way. So, you know, I kind of trying to understand what is it. For my society, they don't accept. They kind of, they cannot even step into the church. But for me, I just want to see both sides. What is exactly Bible said, and then what is it really connected with the lesbian? Is the really why we against with the lesbian? Is it just a human nature, or is the Bible say so? That kind of. So I just trying to understand what is going on.
May I ask what your society or culture is?
It's like a Korean society. They are really strict, you know, so it's still like behind the veil. They do not want to accept. I don't say they are not existing, but they are existing, but they don't want to accept. They just want to cover their eyes. I don't want to see it. That kind of stuff.
I'm David Moore, and I'm here at Holden for a period of time volunteering. I'm a gay man who has come out to church in 93 and came out to myself in, I think it was about 81 in college at Peely. But there's so many aspects of religion and spirituality based on a way of thinking of the old school mentality that I come from, where sexuality wasn't a part of spirituality. And so it's coming out to each other and being aware of how that motion helps to create a spin of faith and workings of numbers and being able to figure out how to balance the views. So it isn't an issue as much as a way of living God's will. Of love and acceptance of all based on Jesus Christ. And so we have to be able to communicate more openly, and Holden has always been that kind of arena for discussion, for knowledge, and for questions. And on a personal level, I seem to be much more open while I'm here and not as much when I'm out because of the fears of being raised in a small family that wasn't open to anything except making money and or, you know, living the normal kind of lifestyle. And so I'm willing to be open here and grow from that aspect. Sexually, there isn't as much stimulation here, so I'm finding that I can really focus on other aspects of my creativity, not just my sexuality. If and when I'm able to be more of a loving and open and less fearful of others, that will in turn help, I think, make the upper church members be able, I mean, as a whole, I think with Jake going into seminary, she will help that process as well as others who are in that journey. And so I have hope, but there's always that negative little bird on my shoulder saying,
You mentioned that you're going into the seminary. Are you going in there with them knowing fully that you are gay and lesbian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also in the candidacy process for ordination. And in the Lutheran Church, you go through a series of sort of hoops for that. And you have a committee that decides whether you can be ordained or not, and they make decisions at various points. And I came out to them before I even started the process. And we had long discussions about it. And they let me into the process, which means I'm allowed to be in the process towards going towards finally getting ordained. But the expectation is that probably somewhere along the line, they'll say, okay, you can't be ordained. And but the seminary will still let me study and still grant me a degree. PLTS is promised that they won't kick me out if I lose my candidacy status. So I'll at least get a degree and then kind of figure out where to go from there. I'll kind of plan it by ear. But I have no expectation of being actually ordained.
Jake, what does the Lutheran Church in America, ULCA, currently demand? Do they demand only that you sign a promise that you'll be celibate, is that it?
Yeah,
do they demand that of heterosexual pastors?
No. It says if you consider yourself to be gay or lesbian, there's no clauses about bisexuality at all. Mm-hmm. If you consider yourself to be gay or lesbian, then you agree to remain celibate, and then you can be ordained. If you're heterosexual, then you have to remain chaste until you get married. And no one really seems to know what that means. So the expectation is celibacy for gay and lesbian pastors.
Is it not discriminatory to have to even disclose that for entering college or seminary?
Yeah, probably. But it's the policy.
I'm curious, though, you did it out of choice, or did you feel like, oh, because you were going for the ordination?
Well, no, I wouldn't. You don't have to tell anybody until the very last step, technically, when they ask you, do you consider yourself to be gay or lesbian? And you have to answer, and if you do, will you be celibate? But I did it out of a sense of authenticity. I don't think I personally could be a pastor and be in the closet. And I don't think I could be in seminary looking towards being a pastor and be in the closet. For me, I need to be really honest about who I am. It's not, for some people, that's not an issue. But, I mean, and the other thing is, I wouldn't be very good at hiding it. So,
what mainline church is currently, are completely open to clergy of either or any of the three persuasions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few.
They're all discussing it now in their conventions.
There's, of actual denominations, the United Church of Christ is the only one, mm-hmm. and of and the Metropolitan Community Church. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is in, of the mainline denominations, is in some phase of discussing that. My guess is it'll be about 20 years before the ELCA ordains gays and lesbians on the current track. If lots of people said, hey, this is stupid, it'll speed it up. But on the current track, with not talking about it at all, it's going to take about 20 years.
So. What did the Catholic bishops, how did they react to the Pope's orders to them in this past year?
What was the Pope's orders?
The Pope issued, not an encyclical, but an edict to the Catholic Bishops of America about, you know, it was to be strictly observed that, and of course, a number of priests are, well, priests, I guess, In America, that we still don't have any female priests, do we? No, so
it's not the issue of ordination doesn't come up in the Catholic Church because priests are celibate.
Yeah, so all of them are.
But of course, I know priests who are. I have a partner.
The Catholic
Church. Almost everybody does.
But the Catholic Church doesn't recognize marriage for either heterosexual or homosexual.
Yeah, so it's not an official issue like it is in the Protestant.
Were you in Phoenix when the Pope came through Phoenix? And he went to, he went to a children's hospital, he went to another hospital, and they tried to introduce him to a Catholic priest who was dying of AIDS, and he walked right on by. It was just something that, I was in Rome, I think, the year after he became Pope for Christmas, because I was working in North Africa. And, you know, I had such hopes for this man from Poland, who was at that time, Poland was at that time officially communist. And I thought, this is a person who will bring new light into the Catholic Church. So I'm very disappointed with many of his stands. Lack of openness.
But that seems to be the prevalent view
of
the Catholic religion.
Are you religious too, or will pass good to God?
I suppose he assumed that this priest got AIDS from homosexual relations, and they just ignored the whole problem and he just walked by.
But that's the patient.
I know, yeah, that's what's so incredible.
There's two separate issues there, because homosexual and AIDS, that's the patient, that's the two things.
Right. And the Pope just chose to ignore it.
So how do those gay lesbian get into this church then? I mean, so that's what I'd like to know more about. Mm-hmm. How is connected with this church? Because the way she said that happens, that's more like human-ish. Mm-hmm. It's not the, it's not God's say.
Yeah.
And the Bible said the love is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this is like his own problem. If I stop by this AIDS patient, probably it's going to be in the causing his poor position. Something like that. You know, I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah.
Definitely,
I think that, in my experience anyway, most people's problems with homosexuality are not religious. They don't have to do first and foremost with scripture. They have to do with the way our culture talks about homosexuality. One of those is that all gay men are pedophiles, for example, like you said. And the fact that that we have a cultural expectation that anybody who's not heterosexual isn't normal, that kind of taints the way we see everything else then. And so when you read the Bible, when you do community service, when you talk to people, whatever, then that kind of comes up. But I've never found anybody who, based on sort of scriptural data alone, makes a decision about whether they think homosexuality is right or wrong.
How would you answer that? Because I guess maybe I come from, that's where I come from, and I've always heard, you know, if God wanted two women together, wouldn't make Adam and Eve, or, you know, you hear the whole Sodom and Gomorrah thing. So how would you answer that from the scriptural text?
Well, it's fairly complicated, and there's a couple books I have here that go into that, that one in particular, which you can't read the title at all because for some reason they decided to do
Is the Homosexual My Neighbor.
Like, is the Homosexual My Neighbor is the name of it, which sounds a little bit alarming, but it's a great book and it really goes through bit by bit. Another one is Heterosexism over there, and that one says the real sin is not homosexuality, it's heterosexism. It's assuming that heterosexuality is the norm and that homosexuality is somehow less. And that's the real sin that we need to be talking about. So that one has a lot of information in it too. On a kind of basic level, scripturally, texts that talk about homosexuality in the Bible fall into three categories. And I hope this doesn't raise a whole lot of discussion, because I'd like to talk about other things too, but there's rules for pure living that the Israelites were expected to follow. And those also include a lot of things that we have no problems with now. And so to expect people to follow some of those and not others is a little bit wishy-washy. The second group is stories that have been associated with homosexuality but really have nothing to do with it, like Sodom and Gomorrah. If you read that text carefully without having in the back of your head that it's about homosexuality, you'll see that it's really an issue of hospitality and about treating your neighbors right, with respect, and treating guests with respect. And there's a few more stories in the Bible that have traditionally been associated with how homosexuality is wrong, but really have nothing to do with it at all. And the third batch is in the New Testament, comments about something that we translate as homosexuality by Paul, but nobody actually knows what those words mean. And most likely they talk up there about temple cult practices. The Bible has zero to say about committed loving relationships
between
people of the same sex. Zero. And Jesus never mentioned anything about it. So that's kind of where things fall. And the thing is that you can find, I find much, far more in the Bible that says relationships are important, fidelity is important, being welcoming of other people, hospitality is really important, that reaching out to people on the margins of society that society views as unclean is extremely important. I think Jesus spent most of his time talking about that. Like, the people you think are weird or unclean or not normal, that's where I'm going. And I think those that you can basically take the Bible and flip it on its head and read it again with just a completely new light. And I find so much in the Bible that's affirming for me. So
we have a fellow here. We haven't hasn't had a chance to talk yet.
Yeah.
Glad to.
Yeah.
And you guys up there too, if you want to introduce yourself.
I'm Jeff, and Jeff Tengiston, and I come up to Holden every couple years and like it a lot. And when I was in college at Pacific Lutheran in the 70s, my roommate came up to me, and it threw me off balance. But it was part of my eye-opening, my total process, my process of becoming okay with it all. And okay with homosexuality. And 2 years ago when we came up here, my son had recently been baptized, and one of his godparents was my roommate, and he was up here too, and so we did kind of a blessing of baptism event by the river. Real powerful to have him be a part of that. I'm a pastor in Bismarck, and I have the experience of being at University Lutheran Church of Hope in the 80s, and valued it, that was part of my seeing how a congregation can be reconciled in Christ. And I think in North Dakota, most of North Dakota seems to be far away from that yet. And PFLAG, is that what you say? Is that how you say it? Mm-hmm. They had an event in Bismarck a couple months ago, and it was pretty significant for them to have to bring in a speaker, and it made me think again about how our congregation, my congregation, could be more inclusive, accepting, and I'm not sure how to do that yet.
PFLAG is Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. for those of you who don't know, it's a an organization that has chapters all over the country. That provide especially a great place for parents who don't know where else to go, who suddenly, when their children come out to them, all of a sudden now you're in the closet, because right. You don't know how to share that information or who to talk to if you have questions. And PFLAG is one of those organizations that has been really helpful.
Jake, how do you think the Matthew Shepard incident, do you think that opened people's minds or closed them or had any impact on the general population?
It's been my experience that events or news occurrences don't do very much to further the conversation, because media wants to make a story out of it and then have commentary that's both sides, you know, and wants to polarize it. And there's nothing we're trying to solve. There's no debate we're trying to win. This isn't a debate between homosexuality and heterosexuality, or, you know, Christians and gays. Or there's not two sides. There's just a lot of people who are looking for acceptance, and people who are advocates and people who aren't sure. And it's not a polarized. It's not something you can polarize and say this side versus this side. And so I found that the media attention tends to kind of just call everything to a standstill while we find something to debate. And it's in conversations like this, and when you friends and family who come out, and when straight people are vocal about being supportive, that's really where things change. But that media attention usually just kind of puts things kind of on standby while there's this big debate, and then everything goes back to normal. I think that's why it's extremely important, especially for straight people, to be vocal advocates. Because just by using words like gay, lesbian, bisexual, sexual minority in your daily speech, you can totally change people's perspectives.
It's hard as a person. I was working with a person, she called herself a lesbian, but she was very loud. I mean, she called herself fat dyke. And I had a hard time saying that. She said, I'm very proud of that. And it's the maybe the cultural barrier that I have, because it's like out of respect, I couldn't say that about her. And even think about it now, it's just like, oh golly, this thing's so derogatory. But she really took a lot of pride in that. And so it's a struggle for sometimes for people to maybe use words. Or, yeah. I mean, I haven't had a problem calling a lesbian or gay, but just a fat dyke to me, just my ignorance, I guess.
So much shame around fatness to start with culturally, and then it is a kind of homophobia to have. It's the homophobia that has made dyke a word in the straight community that has negative connotations, that lesbians then have retaken the word, and because of it, it's all the homophobia behind the word that's, you know, that you're feeling, that you're experiencing.
Yeah, it felt more of a negative term in terms of it was very positive, so I was just trying to switch my thinking to
it. Because it's a negative concept in culture.
Yeah.
Not because the word's negative, but it's the concept of it is negative, and it's trying to change that.
Jake, what about the Native American, the Indian cultures here? Didn't some of them have their shamans or their spiritual person, didn't they choose them from homosexuals? I know I read that in a book here at Open, but I don't know what the name of the book was.
It's a little bit hard to have cross-cultural definitions of something called homosexuality. It's true that there are some Native American tribes that had, that their shamans were cross-dressers, called the Berdash, and they took on the role, there were men who took on the role of women, because the women stayed more centrally located in the camps, and so they were present more than being gone all the time. Whether you could say they were, whether you could call them gay, I prefer to talk about people who are gay and lesbian, to talk about that as something in our society, that people who identify that way are looking for a certain kind of recognition. But to go back and kind of pick out different cultures and cultural practices and cultural ideals and make them fit in perfect parallels is sometimes really tricky.
But as this lady has said, you know, in her culture, it's one thing. I teach English to speakers of other languages, and in Arizona, of course, probably one, and these are all adults, one third of those in our school are from a Hispanic background, whether it's any part of South America or Mexico. And there's a completely different cultural outlook than maybe to those of us from Midwest or Northern United States that aren't in as close contact with Hispanic peoples.
And I think I certainly believe that within every kind of social ordering or culture or whatever, there are going to be ways of describing acceptance. But the way I talk about gay rights in a Korean culture, that probably isn't going to make sense. You know, rights for what? You know, so I think the political and social ways that this issue gets vocalized don't necessarily transfer, but the basic acceptance of human beings certainly does. But luckily for most of us, the courage to speak out has only to be with those who basically speak our own language. Right? There are people in your community who have the same shared experiences. And that's one of the problems with say me being my own advocate is that in some ways there's a slight social disconnection. I don't share all the cultural experiences of a straight person. And so sometimes people think, oh, well, it's just because you didn't fit in as a kid or something. That's another reason why I think straight people are the best advocates for sexual minorities.
What is the reconciling Christ program?
That's something that is that the church council votes upon it, I think. It comes from the community as a whole, but the church council, and we put a statement in all our bulletins that said, we are accepting of people. I forget the statement. It's a pat statement that Lutherans Concerned has. But it just says in all our bulletins and all our literature, it says that that all people are welcome to our congregation, reconciled in Christ. See, for instance, my friends, is Solidarity the name of the Catholic?
Dignity,
yeah. Dignity is the gay and lesbian. And it doesn't mean that all people in there, I mean, just like Lutheran's Concern includes those of us who are straight and want to be advocates as well. Mm-hmm. But it means that people feel, for instance, I've noticed some people that had never been in our congregation before, that as soon as it went out in the Lutheran's Concern newsletter that we were a Reconciling Christ congregation in Tempe, because there are others in Phoenix that started attending our church.
So the congregation agrees
mm-hmm.
to that?
Yeah.
Then.
Mm-hmm.
I have some brochures from Lutherans Concerned if you'd like to take one. And the Concord is the newsletter, which is over there. And the newsletter, or the kind of the magazine that goes out, that's a joint effort of all these organizations of different denominations, is called Open Hand. And that's that one over there,
oh, yeah.
In the reading room. But basically, this is Lutherans Concerned is an organization that tries to is an advocacy organization for the ELCA, but not authorized by the ELCA, basically. And technically, any Lutheran church who openly made statements about, say, believing in the ordination of, could be censured. But most churches find that they increase their membership and have much more vibrant congregations after going through this process.
Is that what split, I'm not Lutheran, so is that what split the Lutheran? Sounds like, is there ELCA and a Missouri Lutheran?
Yeah, that was more over the ordination of women about 25, 30 years ago.
What does the Wisconsin Synod, what it is, do they take a stand?
Similar to the center, it's not an issue.
See, this one came out before. This is 94, yeah. There are a lot more in Arizona now that are reconciled in Christ.
Those are in the reading room too. Heterosexism. Yeah.
It still becomes, and I've been public school teachers, for years I taught eighth graders, and I think this is something that public schools run into all the time is, you know, the worst thing you can say to a boy is you're a fag or something like that. And because it's so typical of junior high schoolers to yell things at people like that. I had a problem with some of my African American students yelling, nigger at other African American students. It was their way of putting down other people in the same more cultural group. But, you know, it's something that teachers have to take a stand against every single time.
But that's something, I'm pretty familiar with the Black community, and that's not necessarily derogatory towards another Black.
I know it isn't, but if I didn't want my white students yelling nigger at the Black kids, what am I, on campus, we did not accept that at all. I know what it does, I mean, within the Black community, but they don't need to put down each other anyway.
But it's like, but she was saying it's not a put down if you're a Black against the Black. That's not a put down.
They meant it as a put down.
In eighth grade, anyway, in her class. Yeah. But I see what you mean.
They did. They were trying to ostracize those kids that they call them. So
more tricky cultural issues.
And then there's the other term that they use. Is you're acting white. That's another way of trying to get. I saw a television program on that recently, and I thought of the kids that I had in Tempe that lived in a community that was largely Hispanic. And if a boy took home homework on the bus in that community, he was just ridiculed. They really put him, I don't know that they said that to the girls, but if boys took home homework, it was a horrible put down from the other Hispanic boys. So kids at that age find all kinds of ways to put down other kids. It's sad.
Does anybody else have any other questions or comments?
I'm curious when people do say, bring up about homosexuality being a sin, or not the whole thing of the sin rather than the sin or however that's said.
Well, that's,
yeah. Hate this.
Right, where it's not seen like, I accept the person, but not the choice or whatever. Just how have people found to address that in terms of homosexuality? In your own interactions in your churches or people?
I found most often if I'm open about who I am and start hanging around with people, they realize that I have much more in common with them than I'm different. And it's more of a relational thing I found that changes people's minds. Mm-hmm. And then being open to having people ask me questions. Around here, I function sometimes as the official gay person. You can ask me any question, everybody knows, like, you can ask me any question, no matter how embarrassing you think it is, I guarantee you that you will become embarrassed before I do. Because I think that's part of my vocation, is to answer questions that people ask. And so just asking questions like, did you choose to be gay? Have you always known you were gay? Were you born that way? When did you first figure it out? Have you ever been attracted to a guy? You know. All those questions, if there's people who can just ask those questions that they wonder about, because I think we don't talk about it enough that there's a general pool of good information. Like you said, I mean, there's just there's not that much information about questions you might really have. So, I don't know, I found that being just letting people ask questions and having conversations. We had one conversation one day on the porch when somebody asked me, well, if you could pick, would you be straight? And I said, no way. You know, and it was kind of like, oh, so you don't see this as a liability. And that was a whole new way of looking at it. So, I don't know, maybe other people have had good experiences with addressing this as an issue, but I've only had good experiences addressing it as in relationships.
Mm-hmm. I guess when you said that, I was thinking, so you know, maybe the question is that categorized as a sin? But so I wouldn't even put that in a category as being a sin. If you're saying, if somebody was saying homosexuality is a sin, but if somebody of the fundamental was putting that, everybody's sinners. I mean, I might not like, let's just say a woman that gossips. I might like her, but I might not like her gossiping. You know, but that's her choice, so it's not necessarily that I would judge what she's doing. It's not for me, but who gives us the right to judge that person's action or what they're doing?
But if you were reaching out to them as a Christian and supporting them in their spiritual growth, you would encourage them not to gossip. And that's where the problem comes in with homosexuality is there's just a lot of that. Mm. If it's seen as a sin, like any other sin, you're encouraged, you're not judged, but you're encouraged to move out of that towards being straight.
I guess I would never encourage anybody not to gossip. I would say, this sounds like gossip, I don't choose to be involved in it, and I'd walk away, but I wouldn't tell. Say if you were the gossiper, I would say, you know, you shouldn't gossip, da da da. That just wouldn't be my style. But I
right, but you wouldn't want to be around it. Where yeah. With a lesbian, you might be fine being around a lesbian.
Right.
So it's a little different. But people put it in the same category as a sin.
I don't know why.
There are cultures that are much more hospitable than the American culture. We may think we're friendly, but I've lived in an Arab culture and several different Spanish cultures, and their hospitality, well, especially those in Latin America, because it was essentially the Moors for 700 or 800 years in southern Spain that came across the ocean and set up governments in Latin America. But hospitality is a huge value for them, much more than for most North Americans. And I think we pale before some, because we have a lot of Hispanic people in Arizona, I am always in wonder at how they can go, you know, no matter what their economic level, they can go to a public park. Sometimes, because it's very hot there, we have shelters that people put up when they're having a picnic in the park during the hot weather, which is about half the year. And they can have a party like that. And it was when I was working in South America that I saw people assembling after a soccer match, a big soccer match in the city, and they were bringing their guitars, and I'm kind of slow to catch on sometimes, and I finally thought, a guitar is the most democratic of instruments. You can take it any place, while a piano certainly isn't. The people that can make a party wherever they are, no matter whether they have an extra penny or not, and live in community and enjoy with each other. And I've learned a lot by observing people in other cultures.
I'm curious, do you think it's an issue of more tolerance, being tolerant of, I mean, because I would love to think everybody could accept everybody's beliefs and then we all could be joyful and all that stuff, and that's not it. Pessimistic side, I don't really think that's going to happen, mm-hmm. You know? But if it's being tolerant of what one person thinks, or being tolerant if that person says, well, no, I don't accept it, I mean, is it an issue of tolerance? I mean, what is it we'd be striving for?
Well, I don't think we're striving for tolerance any more than we talk about tolerance related to people with blonde hair and brown hair. I think what we're looking for is, in a sense, an understanding that that's not something that's gonna. I think there's gonna be a point. My belief is that sexuality runs on a continuum, and the people with the biggest issues are people like me. I'm way on the homosexual end, and people are way on the heterosexual end. Most people are kind of in the middle, and. When we can get to the point of recognizing that about somebody, and to where a kid in seventh grade doesn't have to agonize over who they suddenly realize they're attracted to. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's about tolerance. I think that's about it's not saying, well, you know, I'll tolerate whatever you are, but it's saying that's not. That doesn't have to be your defining characteristic, who you're attracted to. And right now, it is.
No, I heard you saying that maybe, I was just thinking people in general, if they get closed-minded in their ideas of just accepting different people or culture values, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
I'd be looking for something bigger.
Yeah.
I sometimes wonder, is it something like the issue of divorce, which in my parents' generation was mm-hmm. a strict no-no. Mm-hmm. They would not have been accepted in church. They would have been condemned. Mm-hmm. In my generation, although I did it later on, I have gone through a divorce. No problem. Well, not much.
Yeah. And pastors? People don't have a problem with pastors.
And is it just going to take that kind of time?
And I think in the same way that more in our society it became more acceptable, and then that kind of trickled to the way the churches looked at it. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you have all these divorced people in your congregation, you can't just go around telling them they're all bad, you know? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, your pastor gets a divorce, well, you know, when the prevailing culture has enough kind of goodwill with it, then the churches, oh yeah.
And there's still maybe a bit of stigma with divorce, like, you know, your kids are all gonna turn out rotten. Yeah. Because they're from a broken family, of course. But the people, the divorced people like myself, I think are accepted, but there's still something about the whole business of divorce.
My response to your question is, it's that I haven't figured it out for myself yet. Mm-hmm. If someone were to say, we can accept them, love them, but acknowledge them.
Hate the sin,
but
love the sinner.
Yeah, exactly. And that's hard for me. I wonder about how to be a pastor to those people, because my reaction is so strongly against that. I mean, it sounds so elitist that I know what's a sin, and that it's hard for me to be to figure out. I haven't figured out a
that's my problem.
Calm reaction.
Yeah, right. That's my problem, is because way I've been educated as the survivor, gay and lesbian, they are sin. You know, they're against the Bible. That's how I taught. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, oh, they have come out and then I said, I am gay and lesbian. I am as a human being, that's fine. As the human being, I can love them as the human being. But is it really human desire to be a sexuality, that desire, or it's just, it's kind of hard to divide that area, because what is the way I believe is, because nobody really teach us is about the lay and lesbian, because they didn't say anything about the lay and lesbian. Always we taught is there's the man and woman, always opposite sex each other. There's not even sex. Right? Always there's an art of Noah, there's always opposite sex. Always these couples, always opposite sex. And then all of a sudden here's, oh, we have same sex. And then trying to accept as a society, mm-hmm. same as the divorce. Like, okay, there's so, like, I'm not a, you know, match marriage yet. But it's like way I grow up, like my parents, their parents made already their marriage. So they have to marry. With whatever, so they have no choice. And then they have to live forever their life until they die. That's what is the society. And then now we are changing, we are more liberated. And then we are changing. We are changing. So that's what I kind of really hard time accepting. It's okay accepting gay and lesbian. Accepting as a society, just like we are just accepting divorce. So, oh, we see men and women, we met each other. We are different place come from, but we have to kind of compromise. Sometimes we cannot do it. So, okay, I'm going my way, you're going your way. That's kind of accepting more and more. It's more like about almost 50% of we are kind of like broken. Husband, wife, they are kind of divorced. But we are kind of, children's accepting already. They are accepting already. Oh my friend there, they have a stepmother, stepdad. It's kind of accepting that kind of, so that's what I kind of having hard time to do. How am I gonna accepting according to the Bible?
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. We've got David Moore here, and David, I believe, is a concert violinist, right?
Yeah, I play music.
Very well educated.
Yeah.
And he's a good, clean, living human being. Now, why would you be able to really say that he's not right for our culture?
I didn't say he's not right because he's.
Would you have a hard time living next to him and accepting him?
No, I don't. For myself, I don't. Parents. Myself, I don't. For myself, I can live with it, I can rent in my room, and the next, I have no problem. But way I grow up, and the way I educated, it's better. And then, because for myself, I accept him, but it's other peer pressure, okay, I'm gonna take him to my church. And then I tell them, he's gay, and then people's gonna, oh, are you a friend of gay?
Yes, and he's a good person.
Exactly. Yes, I am. Then I'm losing my friend, and then I have to find another friend because probably I have to kind of struggle with both sides. I don't know how do I explain it. I don't know. I'm explaining really well.
No, I know exactly what you're saying because in your, I mean, I had the experience when I come to tell most of my friends I was coming up here, and they say, well, they're accepting of gays, and they're part of that Exodus ministry, I guess. You know, have you heard of Exodus? And so they were kind of concerned that I was coming up here, and I thought, you know, what's the big deal? So it's just the other spectrum. So how do you explain to your friends why you're accepting somebody that is of the homosexual? You know, they'll ask you, well, it's a sin or what, you know, so you don't have those answers. You know, of course you say, it doesn't matter.
You know why I'm accepting my daughter as a homosexual? Mm-hmm. Because she was my baby.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's
and some difference. People, when they find out their children are homosexual or lesbians and so on, they say, out the door, don't ever say
right.
Jason here again. And who raised that child? Who was responsible for it?
Right. No, and I totally understand that. And you can say, you know, I just love him and that's it. You know, but there are some people that will push the envelope and ask you why.
That's
and
exactly what I'm going to be struggling with this thought. That's why I want to know about the answer about the. Mm-hmm. He's another human being. I love you as much as I love him. Mm-hmm. But if somebody asking, isn't it a sin? Is the Bible say so? Then that's what I learn about this Bible. Yeah, so that's what I like to know about this because a lot of people doesn't know talk about these things. Open they said, oh, this is a sin, this is not sin. Because I don't think that's why it's the new generation is they open up and then about the study exactly what is the theology, where is it, and they come up. That's why I came here to learn about exactly where I can.
Jake and David, tell me what your response to this, because sometimes when people have asked me about gay or lesbian people, and I say, at what age did you decide to be heterosexual? Mm-hmm. You know, and they don't want to deal with that question. Were you 12? Did you make a decision when you were 12 or 15 that you were going to be a heterosexual? I said, you know, if you can't accept the way people are born, if you can't accept them with a different color skin than you have, or a different accent than you have, I have a sister-in-law and a daughter-in-law who come from other countries, and they definitely have accents. Then if you can't accept people that are different from your own narrow kind of view, is that a good question to ask people? You know, at what age did you decide to become a homosexual? I mean, a heterosexual.
I think there are definitely a lot of ways of opening conversations and discussing things, but I think you have to know, you don't have to know all the answers yourself.
Yeah.
Because there are, I think by opening yourself up to people and making sure people know that you're a safe person to talk to, hopefully those things can happen. Not that you have to have all the answers to explain to other people, but you can say, well, I learned about this one book that maybe you could read that'll explain it. Or I know about these people in our city, like PFLAG or Lutherans Concerned or one of those that have a lot of brochures and stuff. So you don't have to necessarily have all the information right in your head if you're willing to continue the conversation or say, why don't we go look at the library and find a book and look at it together, or have start a book study or a Bible study. This claiming the promise is a Bible study about that kind of walks people through their own prejudices about sexuality.
Yeah, when you get that concept of sin, I guess that really floors me, because there are certain Christians as special sins, you know, and then there's the sins that they don't overlook. But if you take the Bible, gluttony is a bad sin, you know, and all these Christian functions, you see them sitting there eating stuff in their faces, and I don't mean to be disrespectful because I was a compulsive overeater, and they'll be eating stuff and chocolate cake and this and that, and you're like, well, golly, you know, you look like you know, lose 20 pounds. It says, you know, in the scripture in the Bible to say gluttony is bad, or alcohol is bad, or taking the Lord's name. So the whole sin concept, to me, certain people focus on sins that they particularly don't like but ignore the others. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's where it's like, for me, I turn it around and say, yeah, well, you might say that person is in sin. Well, what about your sin of not paying your child support, take care of your kid, you know? But it gets hard, I think.
That's what people go to church for, is because they realize that they fall short of what they want to be and that they're sinful.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think most Lutheran churches, I don't hear that word sin anymore in the Lutheran church. But it isn't a perfect, quote, Christian. I mean, I've been lucky enough to work in other countries, and I really rebel at the term a good Lutheran or even a good Christian, because I have different people that are
I think the question, there are two questions that I've always heard about homosexuality. One, is it a sin? And the other is, do they choose to be that way? Are you born that way and can't do anything about it? And there are studies going on and it's not conclusive.
If you grew up with a person who had gone toward that, you would see in their growing up years that they are a little different. Our daughter was an athlete, a good scholar, and we got along well with her, but she didn't date much. She wasn't attracted to boys very much.
Why is the choice, can you tell me a little bit more about the choice question? Because that ties into the morality question, is that why? Because if somebody chooses to be...
No, because if it's a choice, then why don't they choose to be straight, heterosexual?
There isn't much choice.
You know, and there's something talking that a lot of people do have that choice, or rather than being born with it.
Because I think question is kind of bizarre to me, the one about... Well, if you're born that way, that's one thing. But if you choose something,
Like, do you choose, the whole question of who you choose to fall in love with is a bizarre question to me anyway.
The obvious answer is, if you had a choice, then stay heterosexual and don't be abnormal.
Yeah,
I think that's what's behind it. So,
yeah, I think so.
So then there are these studies trying to prove what
you're. And I think it's the prevailing.
So am I right? I hear you saying that this is not a choice.
Basically, I would tend to go that way in answering that question for people. I think as prevailing social views change, that will become less and less of a question. Mm-hmm. It's a very pressing question if you think that homosexuality is less than normal, and that you want people to choose the better part. But it's time for dinner, so hopefully all of you can, now you know other people are interested in this, and keep up the conversation and keep it up to your.
And there's a conversation tonight that especially you might, all of you, but especially you about talking about homosexuality in church.